Drawing room over here.
You made it. Oh, come on through. Do you fancy drink? What's your tipple? There be any other domain more male and more Australian than the barbecue? But Australian-born cook, author and influencer Jess Pryles has come to challenge both of those stereotypes. And living in Texas, well, she's become a sensation even in American barbecue culture. She questions if the average tong-wielding backyard cook truly knows where their meal comes from and if they know how to cook it properly, given the Australian obsession with the ease of flavourless gas barbecuing. Jess Pryles, welcome to you.
Stoked to be here. Thank you.
Tell me about the first time that you ate barbecue in Texas. This was on a trip. You went to the States. This was a meal that more or less changed your life, didn't it?
100%. And I remember it vividly. It was a place called Art's Rib House on South Lamar in Austin. Doesn't exist anymore. But I ordered beef ribs and they came out and it was a full Flintstones moment. So it comes to the table. And I always remember thinking my mum used to cook lamb chops under the grill in the oven. And my favourite part was, you know, those crispy edges along the bone.
In alfoil, did she do that? My mum used to do that too.
She did. And then it got really fancy in the 90s when they brought out those foil trays that you could have the drip down into. And that was really next level for, for grilling in home. But it came out and I thought, oh, that looks good. That smells amazing. And I remember biting into it and thinking, oh, my God, this is all of those tiny little bits that I love so much as an entire meal. And it's smoky and it's fatty and it's crispy and it's these golden nuggets of deliciousness. And it really was one of those life-altering moments. Because not only does it taste great, but then when you start to dig into how it's made, it's just – it's so curious and, you know, I'm sure you've seen it too. So many people have fallen in love with that American style barbecue that they do on those offset cookers. And you just wonder, how do these really intense dishes come out of something that looks so locomotive-like and industrial?
And there is something here about authenticity, because Australians certainly, you know, see barbecuing as part of our cultural identity and, you know, the sausage sizzle at Bunnings and school sports and throw another shrimp on the barbie. But really, what's happened in the last 5 or 10 years, partly because of you, it's totally changed. Australian barbecue culture has changed forever. Why?
I think the culture was there in terms of there being a time and a place and relevance, but it was all about simplicity. So even in something like your sausage sizzle, it was sort of a pretty well cremated snag, you know, simple sauces to go along with it. And what's changed, which we really have taken from the Americans, is a much more culinary approach to it. Cooking your whole meal in the backyard, not just turning on the barbie to do one protein, getting more interested in what those proteins are, exploring different cuts. And the challenge, you know, the challenge of a brisket. I think it's driven many, many men to madness and greatness at
Life
the same
long
time.
Lifelong obsession for some of my mates to get a brisket cooked well and properly enough to show off to your mates. And I've sat through some pretty bad brisket meals just to humour the chef, because it really is very, very complicated. So why were we such gas cookers, and why did Australians never adopt charcoal or slow and slow cooking like other cultures, like in the States?
That's a great question. I don't know that I've ever spent really thought about why it didn't exist here.
Because certainly the Greeks and, Lebanese, they all brought that sort of element to Australia for sure. But in mainstream culture, using anything but gas was an anathema for a long time.
And I mean, I think historically we haven't been that accepting of smaller cultures. We're a very different society now, but usually we hold back on wanting to adopt their practices. So, sort of happy to eat the lamb, but there's also a barrier to entry, which was my whole story as well. It seems more complicated than it is. And it seems like, oh, it's expensive and I don't quite get it. And what if the coals go out and what if the lamb's not ready on time? So you sort of just nearly leave it to the people who know how to do
it. We're lazy. Just say it. We are lazy. We just want the on button and the off button. And that's how you cook a sausage. But you co-founded the Australasian Barbecue Alliance, which sort of sanctions barbecue festivals and competitions here in Australia and New Zealand. These are huge, huge events now. If you've never seen one, we're talking about thousands and thousands of people all with this interest in common. When you set up the Australasian Barbecue Alliance, 5 years ago, it must have been a smaller version of itself. And how did American barbecue culture translate to Australian produce?
Yeah, I think it must have been 7, 8, or 9 years ago that we actually founded it, because I know I did it before I emigrated. We wanted to establish something that firmly supported the type of thing, barbecue, that we were promoting. And we use the words interchangeably, but we're still at a place where I think there's an educational component. I'm trying to get more Australians to use the phrase grilling as well, and grilling being that hot and fast, really quick, something's going to cook in 10 minutes thing, because barbecue is that real commitment to low and slow, standing out there. If I like to say, if I'm asking you over to come over because I'm grilling steaks, you'll be eating relatively soon. But if I'm asking you to come over because I'm cooking a barbecue, you really want to make sure you don't show up 16 hours before the brisket is ready.
Eat before you come. That's basically the rule.
Yeah, that's it.
And especially since you were an outsider to the American culture, being born in Australia, and dare I say, also a woman. How did that go down when you started to sort of find your feet in this culture?
I think that, I was genuinely curious about it and wanted to know more. There's a thirst for knowledge. And in so many areas, and I'm no exception to that, it's a genuine curiousness or curiosity that has driven things, and that resonates as being true and organic and relatable. So I've made it my business to sort of, share what I'm learning along the way, which in turn is of interest to other people as they get into it, but also really focus in on the way that it's done right, the options, the meat science behind it even, and really establish myself as now a credible resource. So I think that I've enjoyed a lot of success because people can reliably follow me. It's not because I'm a woman, but it's because they know that they'll get good answers and good recipes, and sort of just made it my business to be the best that I can be in the space. And I try and make it genderless. But everyone always asks that question, what's it like? I really have been received with very open arms, especially by the Texans. Even now and again, I turn around and go, God, I'm a woman, an Australian woman who moved to Texas and is now teaching barbecue classes over there. I work very closely with the Texas Beef Council. And it's a really unlikely story in many ways. But I care about sharing the right information, I suppose.
So when it comes to the right information, and in a spirit of learning here, the States really has an interesting history and patchwork of barbecue cultures. You've got Texas and Kansas that had the sort of cattle trail and the infamous, German influence, if you like, Czechs and migrants like that. Then you had on the East Coast, the Carolinas are known for their hog and barbecue pork. There really is a really deep sort of, I suppose, geographical kind of patchwork to American barbecuing culture that we Australians don't really realise, do we?
No, but, those lines are being blurred. It's really interesting because barbecue is moving at a phenomenally fast rate. In the same way as it's been so popular in Australia in the last few years, we've also seen a massive resurgence of it in general interests by Americans. It used to be, if you're a meat nerd who's into barbecue, that we look for a Packer-style brisket when it comes to barbecue. And that wasn't even that available outside of Texas in some of the other states where perhaps it's not warm enough to barbecue all year round. And we're really starting to see that impact. So So you can go to Brooklyn now and get a plate of barbecue that has influence from the Carolinas, from Texas. That hyper-regionality is now really being diluted as we're just seeing an overall increase in the quality of barbecue. And certainly, like, mind-blowing for me to come back to Australia every year and just see how many joints are open, but not merely in numbers, the quality and also the identity of it being a truly Australian barbecue now. Are they bringing in different local ingredients, different inspirations? And we see that a lot in Texas. There's a big resurgence in Mexican-American barbecue culture. So things like beef fat tortillas elotes, which is a corn dish with brisket in it. And I think that we can bring in Southeast Asian influences and, you know, modern Australian culinary influences. You know, beetroot barbecue sauce is a great example of that.
Beetroot barbecue. Where is that from?
I think that's something that I would classify as an Australianism. Beetroot coleslaw is something that I've made before. I actually served it at the Texas Governor's Mansion on Australia Day. We did a whole Aussie/Texan Barbie there. And I thought, I really want to incorporate this. So we sort of did little damper rolls instead of biscuits. And I did a beetroot coleslaw because I wanted to bring that in. And I think that that's, to me, what modern Australian barbecue looks like.
Yeah, it's got to have a little bit of that identity rooted in it.
You've got to hide some Vegemite in there somewhere.
Jess Pryles is here. We're talking all things barbecue here on RN Drive. It seems like reading your books and seeing some of your videos, it seems like there are lots of different ways to go here. There's the agriculture part of it. There's the science. There's the sort of meat nerd stuff you're talking about before, the hunting part. I mean, it seems like you've formed a very holistic body of knowledge around these things. What is it that makes you the most intrigued when it comes to what you do?
I've offshot into so many different areas, as you mentioned. I just completed my graduate certificate in meat science. So, you know, my imposter syndrome doesn't want to allow me, but my professor said I can technically call myself a meat scientist now. This is going to sound terribly corny, but what it keeps coming down to for me is it's a love of food that ultimately drives everything. So you get curious about it, but it's that search of the best flavor at the end of the day.
It's the pursuit of perfection.
It is the pursuit of perfection, but it's that pursuit of family gathering, sharing with your mates, like, oh, have a bite of this. Oh, did you try that? And that aspect of deliciousness, really, it distills down to that at the end of the day. But I really did enjoy that idea of beyond the mistakes that we can make in our kitchen. Like, well, why? What are the variables? And my journey started very earnestly as someone who didn't really understand how to choose meat at the grocery store, at the supermarket, what I was supposed to buy, how I was supposed to cook it. And I think that unlocking all of those levels is something that sort of remains the pursuit.
There is lots of discussion about the sustainability of eating and producing meat. I mean, how do you think the culture is going to shift as meat becomes more expensive or perhaps man-made, you know, perhaps unable to keep up with demand?
That's an interesting question. I think that what we're seeing with things like briskets and low and slow cooks is it does encourage it to be a more centerpiece meal, nearly like a traditional Sunday roast. And the whole point of Sunday roast was that you know, many times you couldn't afford to have a heavy protein during the week. And so you'd sort of save it all for that weekend. And it's the same aspect, I think, of really taking the time to cook something that then becomes a real celebration piece.
When it comes to what about hunting? I mean, obviously Texas is a hunting culture. Mm. Do you get questions about this, about whether or not, you know, the true provenance of food is only knowable if you killed the animal yourself?
Look, that was important to me personally. I don't think it has to be everyone's story. It does, you know, just to be completely candid with you, I do get pretty annoyed by the people who don't even like to handle raw meat but will eat it. I think that's perhaps a little bit too much of a disconnect. But that was my story. You know, I grew up in Melbourne, very inner city. I would never have thought that I was going to become a huntress and cut down my own deer and do all the processing one day. But it is a part of Texan culture, and it's just so common even in a city like Austin that's very liberal and very urban, that someone's going to have camo at the back of the closet for when hunting season starts. So I wanted to experience that, one, as a part of really digging in to Texas life, but two, I'd been to abattoirs, and by this stage I was sort of working as a full-fledged, you know, professional carnivore meat advocate. And it was just important to me to really put my money where my mouth was and say, oh, baby deer are so cute, but can you do it? It was just a personal hurdle that I really wanted to be able to meet and see if I could get across. And it's a really important piece now. It felt very, there was something very empowering about it. It was very like, okay, I can survive the zombie attack now, you know, like if everything hits the fan, I'm going to be okay at the end of the day because I can actually do this thing and I know where my food comes from. But that doesn't mean, you know, I can plant a tomato plant and enjoy tomatoes every now and again. It's not going to sustain everything that I eat. So I think that there is also room for commercial farming and commercial ranching. It's just about doing it mindfully and cautiously. And we do have to look towards sustainability as well. That is really important. And there's a lot of work being done right now in regenerative agriculture. And I think that that is going to be the way forward.
Yeah, I suppose you've got to wonder if someone's worried about learning where their food comes from, that's a problem in the first place, right?
You've
got to be brave and honest enough to understand where how it got to you. Jess, it's been an absolute pleasure to meet you. Jess Pryles has been my guest. For more of Jess and her books, you can go to jesspryles.com. Thanks so much for joining me.
Cheers. Thank you.
You've been listening to a podcast of The Drawing Room with me, Andy Park. For more great conversations, search for The Drawing Room on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.